Hi, I'm Mindy.
Hi, Mindy.
Hi. And I am a very grateful and enthusiastic member of Al-Anon, but I'm scared to death, I have to tell you. You know, I've never spoken at a luncheon, so I'm a virgin tonight for the first time in a long time. And if I pass out, just please cut off my Spanx and throw me back up here, because that meal was fantastic for me. I hope you enjoyed it as well, too. I really want to thank Dolores. You know, Dolores, she goes to the Monday night Torrance Podium Participation Meeting, which, in my opinion, is the fabulous planet, the best meeting on this planet. And I have so many of my friends here that participate in that. That meeting has saved my butt. And just the sharing is just so right on every time. And I just am so grateful for the Zoom aspect anymore, because I live in Santa Clarita, even though it says Torrance, because I'm just kind of known in Torrance, I guess. But yeah, I live in Santa Clarita, and I used to drive down every so often, but my sponsor attends that meeting, and she's in Hawaii right now, so hi! You know, and I'm grateful for one of my best friends, Myra. You know, the great thing about driving from Santa Clarita down here is the whole 2.5 hours of meeting nonstop. And we've been through everything together. I'm really grateful for that. So thank you, Myra, for being here. You know, there's two pages. I love our literature, and I think, you know, there's two pages. Well, I told Dolores this morning, I read the morning page for Courage to Change today, and I had to go back to my room and reapply my makeup, because it just made me cry. You know, it was something that, it's all about gratitude, you know, and that's what that page was all about. But first I want to read this, because this is what's really important for me. You know, I'm so grateful to belong, this is May 10th in Courage to Change. It says, I'm so grateful to belong to a fellowship where everyone speaks for himself or herself. Al-Anon has no spokesperson, no authority who tells us what our experience is or has been. I am the only one who can tell my story. I find it very comforting to be part of a group of people who share some of my problems and feelings. Although we have much in common, each Al-Anon member has unique wisdom to offer. Through the interchange of experience, strength, and hope, we learn specific ways in which fellow members have applied the Al-Anon program in their situations, taking what we liked and leaving the rest. Each of us is free to benefit from this individual approach to our common purpose, recovery from the effects of alcoholism. So when I share in a meeting, I try to avoid phrases such as, this is a problem for all of us, or we tend to do that. Instead, I look at sharing as an opportunity to see myself more clearly. And I think, you know, for me, take what you like and leave the rest. We do work the program in our own way and pace. And I think that was always my fear, is I want to be perfect. I want to have that message where everybody like, oh, she's so great. But, you know, I'll rewind here a little bit. When I came here today, I put on my mirror, there's a big thing in lipstick that says, you're wrong, on my mirror. And Myra's like, what the heck is that for? And I was like, I'll tell you later. And so as we're getting ready and everything, we're like, I'm saying, oh, nobody's going to understand my humor. Nobody's going to laugh at my jokes. Nobody's going to think this. And then I look at that mirror and I say, you're wrong. And I say, oh, yeah. And I got that from an AA speaker at a convention. And it's like, those are the things that I love, is I'm stealing lots of stuff from speakers, you know, so it's not my original stuff. And like Susie, you know, such a dear friend, and we go back way back. And I say that, you know, I came in June of 1981, and as she always says, it's not to impress or depress anybody, but that's just, you know, the date that I came in. And it's like, yeah, you know. So my story, how it really all came to fruition here is, I grew up, I did not have active alcoholism in my family. I was a very religious, good little Mormon girl, so anybody who knows, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't do that. It wasn't like a cult or, you know, a commune or anything, but it was wonderful growing up in my youth. You know, I felt so protected. You could trust everybody. You didn't have to worry about a lot of stuff that happened in your life. And, you know, it was just, it was wonderful. But then I became a teenager, and I started noticing boys. And I started noticing all those people having fun out there, and I thought, oh, wow, that's, why are they having so much fun? And so one of my church friends, she started inviting me to go with her to these parties and places, and I thought, wow, this is really great. And I was always lured to the people that like to drink and do drugs and all of that stuff. And a lot of it was because, for my very close friends know that I'm very hyperactive. So people always thought I was on drugs, you know? I never did drugs or anything. It was like, yeah, here we go. And it was just like, I just always wanted to have fun. And so she introduced me to a lot of things, and then I started on a different path in my life. But, you know, when I came into program, I'm so grateful for doing a four-step and a very searching and fearless moral inventory that gave me a lot of insight in my past, even in my growing up, you know, of how certain things had happened. And it just was like, I get the awareness, the acceptance, and then the action. But in doing my inventory, I got to find out where my idea of I had so much power came from. You know, my parents, they would fight occasionally, throw vases at each other and hide behind TVs and all that stuff. And they were threatening to get a divorce. And I, as a six-year-old child, did like my mother used to do to us as siblings, you know, sit you in this corner and sit you in that corner. You tell them that you love them, and you tell them that you love them. And I did that with my parents. It's like, you tell mommy you love her, and you tell daddy you love her, and that you're never going to get a divorce. And they apologized, and they never got a divorce. And I thought, look at me. I'm so wonderful. You know, I did that. And as I progressed, you know, my best friend, I used to go to her vacation Bible school with her during the summer. And she was in a religion where they actually served wine for the communion or whatever. And she would go to the refrigerator, and she would just, it was boxed wine. And she would just, like, pour it into her mouth. She'd say, I just love this stuff. And I think, what the hell is that, you know? But it's like, I look at the people that I associated with at a really young age, and it was just like, those were the kind of people I loved. And there's nothing wrong with it. That's what I get to learn today. It's okay to love an alcoholic, whether they're drinking or not. And just in case my husband's watching, that's our... That's our love sign to each other, and all my friends, too. Anyway, you know, with my best friend in high school who drugged me around to a lot of different places, she was a drinker and drug user and everything, and I remember betting her. I said, I bet you can't go one day without drinking or doing drugs. And, of course, she couldn't, and I was watching her. I was like, I'm going to catch you. Because I'm going to be right. my dad was a Marine. So, you know, I was kind of raised with that mentality where you protect the older people. You are there. You are taking care of people, and you make sure that everybody is safe and sound, and you never let any of that go. And that's another part of my life that I got to see. There's some really good things about all of that, you know. And in doing my inventory, I got to see that there's good in the bad of me and bad in the good of me. You know, I get to see all of that stuff. How I was introduced to the program is, well, prior to that, I was engaged at a very young age. I was engaged at the age of 17. And the man that I was engaged to, another thing I learned is I'm a provoker. Go figure. And we were playing the game of Risk, and I was winning. Yeah, because I'm competitive. And I just went, ha, 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 at him. And he slapped me across the face. And I just, you know, we had all kinds of other altercations, but that was just like the straw, you know. And my mom walked past me, and she said, why are you marrying this guy? And it was like the first time I really heard it. I thought, yeah, why am I marrying this guy, you know? That was part of his family and his life history, that's just kind of what happened throughout their generations. And so I broke up with him. And I thought, I am... forget men, man, I am not dating. If you take me someplace nice, I'll go on another date with you. But I was shallow, I was just arrogant, and just like, you're going to serve me. I'm no longer going to be this person who is the little squaw. And sorry, I hope that didn't offend anybody with the social stuff. And so, you know, I dated a lot of different people, and I used to photograph musicians, and I would, you know, go to clubs and everything, and one of them was a drug dealer, and I would carry guns, and it's like, what? I never in a million years would think, well, at this point, I would never do that, but, you know, thinking that I could have wound up in prison. It was kind of like Bonnie and Clyde, man, all right, let's tote these pieces here, you know? And my life was just going down the wrong path, and that's when I met my husband, and which turned it around. So, and I was managing a photography studio, and he came in to have some pictures done, and I looked at his picture, and I said to my girlfriend, I said, "You see this man? He's going to be mine. This is another where I get my power, right?" And so I took his name and his address off the order form, and I sent him a card with a picture of just my eyes in it, and I sent it to him, and I said, "I'd really like to see you." And I didn't sign it. So any single women, it really works. So, and he came in a couple days later, and he said, "I got your card." And I said, "Well, how did you know it was from me?" And he said, "Oh, I'd never forget those eyes." And so it was like, oh, it's so romantic. And actually it was, you know. And what happened is we dated. It was just such a great courtship. And then in April of that year, he decided to tell me that he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he gave me an AA big book. And inside the AA big book, he wrote, "Without this book, I wouldn't know that I love you." And so I thought, well, yeah, that's really cute. And I put it on my coffee table and used it as a coaster for my champagne. And, you know, it was kind of like, that's nice. So he decided to start taking me to open AA speaker meetings. And I thought, okay, let's go. So I'm game. I'm down for anything. Let's just get in the car, right, Betty Ann? And so where I started going to open AA meetings was the Friday night Ohio Street speaker meeting, and oh no, not Friday night, Saturday night Ohio, Monday night Camden, Friday night Rodeo. It was like such a wonderful place. And you know, at the Camden meeting, it was just wonderful because one time the AA speaker was saying something and someone in the back didn't like what they wanted and they picked up a chair and they threw it at him and a fight broke out and I thought, oh my God, these are my people. You know, it was like so much fun. And Michael grabbed me and went outside. And it just was wonderful. But how I started participating in Al-Anon was we would sit in the front row because that's where his sponsor told him to sit. And the secretary of the meeting said, "You come up here and read a portion of chapter 5 or whatever it was." And I thought, oh, alcoholic, I'm not supposed to do that. And everybody's like, go, 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 go. So I went up there and I read it and I said, "Hi." Now I had heard about Al-Anon, but I had never been to a meeting. And I said, "Hi, I'm Mindy. I'm an Al-Anon." Oh my God, the room stood up and they applauded. And it was like, wow, this is awesome. I had 100 alcoholics approving of me at one time. And it was just heaven. It was just so good. So after that meeting, someone came up to me and said, "Oh, so you're an Al-Anon. Why aren't you upstairs at the Al-Anon meeting?" And I thought, what? And my husband's sponsor said, "You know, if you want this relationship, you should go to Al-Anon." Well, that was the ticket right there. I want this relationship so bad, I'm going to go to my Al-Anon meeting. So I went to the Al-Anon meeting, and I sat there, and it was a circle, and then there were rows of chairs behind it. And of course, I sat in the rows of chairs behind it because I don't know what you people are doing. And people would share, and they would talk about all these things. And I'd think, oh, what? Throw the bum out. Who would put up with that crap, right? Oh, my God. I was so judgmental. So any of you who are there going to judge me, it's okay. I've been there, too. You know, and I was just... You know, I didn't understand because I had not lived with active alcoholism. And so our life continued. So a lot of people know my story. My story has changed over the years. And anyway, so I got really involved in Al-Anon. You know, I just thought, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I remember one time, you know, I know that they're not supposed to take a drink, and we went to a party one time, and there was somebody had amaretto, not at a program party, but amaretto on the top, and so he poured it out and was going to eat the ice cream, and I thought, there's a little dot on there, don't touch that. You're not supposed to have that. But a lot of that is because, you know, my husband, for those who have read the AA Big Book, there's the description of the alcoholic. And there's four descriptions of the alcoholic. And my husband is a number four. And when he told me that, those are the people that wind up on Skid Row and all that other stuff, that I looked at this gorgeous hunk of a man, and I thought, there is no bloody way, you know? And one time we were going to a program party, and there was a street person there. And he came up to us, and he said, hey, you got some money? And my husband said to him, Do you need a drink? And he said, oh, yeah, I really do that. So he went in and he bought him a bottle of alcohol and some cookies and then gave him the phone number for AA. And he said, you don't have to live this way anymore. And when he came back to the car, I said, oh, my gosh, why would you talk to that person? You know, judgment. And my husband said, that was me. You know, that's who I was. And I didn't understand that. You know, I didn't understand the disease of alcoholism. Oh, shoot. Sorry. And, you know, the depths that it goes to. It doesn't matter how smart you are, whatever, the intelligence, the education, the money, all of that. Because he had all that. And I just couldn't comprehend that this could ever happen to us again. And so we got married, and, you know, not long into our marriage, it just all started happening. And I was like, he had neck surgery. So here's my disclaimer. I know that Al-Anon is just about alcoholism, but as my husband identifies, he's a garden variety alcoholic with a drug problem. And, you know, I would go to Al-Anon meetings and I would talk about them, and people say, you know, this is just Al-Anon. Try Naranon, try this, try that. And I did. I wanted help. I needed answers. And what I found was it really didn't matter. It was me. You know, that's what this is about, is my reaction to everything out there. And I came back to Al-Anon, and I never left Al-Anon, but I came back. And when I would participate in meetings, I would just talk, excuse me, about the active disease. I wouldn't say what it was, what he was doing, any of that stuff. It was just the active disease and how it affected me. And it was crazy. It was crazy. What's wonderful about speaking is I get to tell you all that stuff, you know, in meetings. It's like just, but this way, hopefully you can identify with it. So anybody who's newer out there, you know, you're not alone. That there are all kinds of insane things that happen. But, you know, when I discovered that the active disease was in our home, I went ballistic. I was crazy. I wanted to beat the crap out of him. I wanted to just rip everything apart. And we had guns in the house, and I'll go into that story personally if you ever want to talk about what the gun situation is. And you can figure it out. My sponsor already says, call before you shoot. But what wound up happening is after all that scuffling, I'm so grateful I can laugh at myself. I haven't been able to laugh at myself again for a while. But I wound up in my closet, and I had a piece of Lycra lace, and I put it around my neck, and I tightened it. And my husband was sitting, so when we used to speak together, he would say, I sat there watching her eyes bulge out, and I wondered, who would believe she did this to herself? So he gratefully untied me, and that's why I'm here today. So, but it was like the insanity. It's like, I'll show you what you're doing to me. And that was crazy. And I wound up in my bathroom under the sink in the fetal position just crying, help me, God, help me, God. And, you know, I had a sponsor. I've had several sponsors, but I had this one sponsor, and she always reminded me that the steps are written in past tense. You don't take a step, you took a step. And it isn't until the evolution of my recovery where I was able to look back and say, oh my gosh, I really believe that's when I took the first three steps. You know, I can't, he can, so I'm gonna let him. And I got up and I went to a meeting. And just everything progressed for a long period, not that long period of time, but like 6 months. And I wound up leaving because I just didn't want to live that way. I was gonna die, you know, I was gonna die. And, you know, I called his dad and I said, this is what's going on. And then his dad took charge. You know, he found him a recovery place, all this stuff. I just backed away. You know, and what I get to look at today is, you know, this program is not, there's not a spiritual part of the program. For me, it's all spiritual, you know, and every little thing that happens in my life, I get to see the fingerprints of God in every area, you know, and I choose my higher power, call him God, and it is a him, so, for me, And I get to see all these little miracles that he has put in my path. I have no idea where I am in time-wise, so. He got into recovery. I didn't know if I was gonna be married anymore. You know, one of the things is when he was in recovery, on New Year's Day, the hospital called me and they said, Mrs. Cannon, we had a problem last night. Your husband stopped breathing, and I hung up the phone. I don't remember if they told me he started breathing again, but I got up and went to the Rose Parade, you know? It was like, okay, plan A, that's what I'm supposed to do, and just continue on with what I'm doing, you know? And I've learned in Al-Anon to have plan A, B, and C. Thanks, honey. Okay. Even for speaking today, you know, I've been taking some commitments lately, and because of other things that are going on in my life, I've had to cancel multiple times. But I always have someone to back me up, and I have a very dear friend who's a great speaker. Her name's Jennifer P. in Santa Clarita. Hi, Jennifer. Oh, it's G now. Oh, my God. Jennifer G. But she was willingly, you know, I'll fill in for you if you need to. You know, I think that that's part that I've learned in program two is if I can't keep a commitment, I fill that commitment. And so she might have been your speaker today, depending on what was going on in my life. So Michael got into recovery, and you know, what started happening is he started attending men's stag meetings. He took it seriously. I was in Al-Anon, and we were just kind of going like this, you know? And I thought, well, this isn't a marriage. What the heck is this? You know, and I was gonna leave then, you know? It was like our speaker last night, I'm gonna divorce him, all these different things that, you know, God kind of, as they say, you know, we make plans, I make plans, and God laughs and laughs and laughs, so I get to see that I have all these things that I think I'm supposed to do, and I just do the footwork, and then some things change, and I have to just be willing to take that path, and we got back together, you know, our relationship mended, it was wonderful, we had, you know, AAs and Al-Anons constantly around us. We were, you know, a couple in recovery, and hoorah, we spoke everywhere together and all these wonderful things, and he was of service and I was of service. I was on service board and it was with Dan, and, you know, I did all these wonderful things. It was like, I am on fire. I am just into recovery. I am so good. Yeah, ego. And, you know, and the other thing that we went through, infertility, you know, and there was a time that I just desperately wanted to have a child, and everybody around me was getting pregnant. It's like the person who was the chairperson of service board wasn't even married, and she got pregnant like that. And then my best friend got pregnant like that, and I'm like, hi, mommy. And it's because I didn't do part of my footwork. I had to have a certain surgery, and I did that, and then I got pregnant. And so I have this miracle baby, you know. I was 10 years it took me to get pregnant. And he is the greatest gift that has ever, next to Al-Anon, of course, but the greatest gift that's in my life. I have this wonderful, wonderful young man. And then I had two miscarriages after that. And I thought, you know, I guess I'm not supposed to have any other children, you know, and he's gonna be it. I kind of feel sorry for him because, okay, Dane, let's do this. Mom, I'm going away with Erica, you know, come on. I want him to be there all the time because I love him. But I get to let him go and do whatever he wants to do. Okay, so I've gone a little bit off path here. So we had this wonderful life, you know, all these wonderful things are happening. I had the career of my dreams, you know, it was exactly what I wanted to do. I was making lots of money. We had property out in Leona Valley. We had 10 acres. I custom built a home. It was just, life is so good. And then I lost my job, or my contract was up, and I couldn't find another job. And so we wound up having to, you know, sell our home. And I remember very clearly, I had a very dear friend, and nothing against her, you know, because this was how we always lived, is, you know, God understands that you worked so hard for this house, he's not going to let it happen. And I lived on that for a really long time, thinking, okay, God's not going to do this. My house is not going to go away. But I had to start thinking, well, what if that isn't what God wants? You know, what if that isn't what God wants? And we sold our house, and it was better because we lived in a place and my husband had to drive. Okay, so, sorry, Antelope Valley, and then the fire happened, and so he would spend 2 hours driving to work and 2 hours driving back, which Myra used to do for years, but, you know, it just wasn't good. So we moved closer back to the Santa Clarita Valley, and it was like everything just started coming into fruition again, you know, where it was really wonderful. I want to jump back a little bit more because working the steps is what really has helped me. You know, I worked those 3 steps in my mind, you know, turning my will and my life over to the care of God. And I always used to question, what in the heck is my will and my life? You know, what does that mean? And my sponsor at that time, Priscilla, she used to say, well, it's just your thoughts and your actions. And that simplified it for me, you know. My thoughts and my actions, well, I can do that. I can, you know, really start working on that. And especially the saying, you know, that I had to act myself into better thinking than think myself into better actions. And that's where I became really active in service. And I've done multiple 4 steps. You know, when I was first in program, I did an autobiography. And when I read it to that sponsor, she just kind of went, because it was like, them. This is why I'm this way. Them. And she knew I wasn't ready, but it was like a process for me. And that's okay. And then I did the Blueprint for Progress, which at that time was just yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And then I did the 4-Column Method out of the AA Big Book. And that one was really wonderful for me. But the last one that I had done was a questionnaire. And I know it came from a different program, but it truly was a searching and fearless moral inventory. And it took me a couple years to finish that because it was 172 questions. And I used to travel on business. And I would take it with me, and I would write here and there. And some questions just would, like, I'd be bawling my eyes out. And some of them were, okay, that didn't apply. But it took me a long time, and I was so excited to finally do my 5th step because I thought, this is going to give me all my answers. And I did it with my sponsor at that time. We drove up the coast and everything, and I'm reading it. And at the end, she said, well, don't you feel better? And I thought, no. I don't feel anything other than, oh my God, I can't believe I told you all that stuff. And, you know, I love that sponsor. I love her dearly. She really did a lot of wonderful things for me, and a lot of growth came out of our relationship. But I called my grand sponsor when I got back to my house, and I was just bawling my eyes out. And she said, honey, you come over here and you read that to me. And so I went over there and I read that to her. And that in particular was the thing that opened the door for me in recovery, because she didn't tell me what that was. Oh God, that's fear, or that's jealousy, or that's this. She would say, what does that sound like to you? And so I was able to identify it. And so she would say sometimes, well, it kind of sounds like this to me. And so we got to talk about that. And so I got to make my list. I got to make my list of my fears, the people that I owed amends to, all of these other things in these lists. Is like, if I hadn't done that 5th step in that way, I couldn't have really moved into the other steps, because that gave me the roadmap how to do the amends and, you know, all the character defects and what to discover about myself. And it was really beneficial for me. So I did that, and that's when I became very active in service. And then I started having issues with people at meetings. It's like, oh my gosh, she's sharing that again. Judgment, judgment, judgment. And so my sponsor said, don't you think it's time you start working on the traditions? I thought, okay. So I started working on the traditions. I started attending a meeting that was a step tradition and concept meeting. Holy smokes, concepts? And I can tell not many people have read those concepts just by that response. But it was just, you know, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience for me, and I got to see how I could apply the traditions. But what happened for me also as an intergroup rep, I had my little service manual, and I'd go to the business meeting, and I'd say, okay, that's on page such and such, blah, 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 blah. It was good, and it was bad for me. I got to see where I needed to have a balance in my life, you know, because there's a lot of not having a balance, you know. I just was full of myself in a lot of areas. Thank God people still love me and walked me through that. So, you know, when I got into service, that's when she told me that I needed to get in, or she suggested that I start studying the concepts very quickly. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, she used to describe our program as a three-sided stool. You know, you take one side away, it's going to fall over one of those legs. And that really was a good concept for me to see that visual. I'm a visual person. I have my chicken purse, so I'm not scared. Anyway. So, you know, life was good. We moved back to Santa Clarita. And then the active disease came back into my life. After, you know, here I am 30-some years in program. My husband had 20-plus years in program, and he had to have another surgery, and another surgery, and another surgery, and surgery after surgery after surgery. And I know I never want my husband to be in pain, absolutely not. But he's the type of alcoholic that can't take medication for a period of time, you know? It needs to be monitored. And it's the saying that I think it was Norm Alpe that used to talk, is that the man takes a drink, the drink takes a drink, then the drink takes the man. And that's exactly it. And that was always my concept of, don't put it in your mouth, dude, it's going to be gone. And, you know, my husband was in the medical field for a number of years and then went on to teaching. But he knows all how to talk about it. And he didn't tell his doctor that he was in recovery. And the doctor prescribed him massive amounts, because he had a pharmacy license years ago. That's where all the stuff came from. Might pour down the toilet. And anyway, that's part of the previous go-around. But things started happening that were really bad, you know. And I didn't know that the active disease was active, you know. He started getting in car crashes, and he started just all kinds of other things that started happening. And I'm thinking, why is this happening? You know, blah. I mean, when Dolores said, it's really important for me to have someone who is living in the active disease, and I said, well, I don't know if I'm living in the active disease. How's that for working our program? But I know he's treating me nicer today, you know. And that's a big part of it. But what started happening is just all this crazy stuff happening in our lives. And I would go to my meetings, and, you know, my sponsor just told me, you just need to share at your meetings, Mindy. People are going to love you through this. You just need to tell them that you're having a really hard time. And that's what I had to do. You know, my ass was falling off. And there used to be, this convention is so important to me. Okay, my son thinks I have ADD first, so try and keep up. Sorry, that belts everything up. There used to be a woman that came to this convention when it was up in Bakersfield, because that's where I would always go when it was up in Bakersfield, yeah. And she would always talk about when she'd share at a meeting where you have to show everybody your butt. And it's like, what, your butt? And she'd say, yeah, have you ever tried to see your own little derriere back there? And she'd say, you have to look in a mirror. You know, your mirror is important. And she says, but you're my mirrors. That's why I come to a meeting and I share what's going on in my life. Because you're not going to tell me what to do, but any of you who have walked that path will, you know, be able to share with me what your experience has been. And so that's what I would do. I didn't care how long I had in program, but I'd have to just be really honest and just share what was going on in my life. And I remember when we were still meeting in person at my Torrance meeting, someone asked me to read Understanding Ourselves. And I got up and I started reading it, and I just started bawling, you know. It was like, oh my God, this is my life again. This is what's happening in my house. This is how I'm feeling about everything. You know, it's not blaming the other person of what's happening, but it's just understanding that this disease is screwy, you know. It's really painful. And I couldn't laugh. I couldn't smile. I couldn't do any of those things. I was just in so much pain and thinking, how did I go from here, being that smug, self-righteous, look at my program, to back to, oh my God, you know, my life has fallen apart. And you know, the people at the Torrance meeting just loved me through it. Nobody judged me. Nobody, you know, criticized me or said, you have to do this. Why don't you do that? You know, it was just like, they understood my pain. And my sponsor, God love her, you know, it's like sometimes I would call her and she'd say, I guess you just need to blow off a little steam, huh? I said, yes. You know, I have those intimate meetings where I'm able to just, you know, do those things. And that's the tools of the program for me, you know. Life is wonderful. Don't get me wrong. I just, you know, it's just dealing with the active disease. I really don't like it. And what started happening is I had to do like I did before. You know, the book, The Dilemma of the Alcoholic Marriage, that is one of my favorite pieces of literature. I mean, it tells you things to do. It's like anger. That whole chapter on anger saved my butt. It's like, do gardening, get your aggressions out, get your energy out that way. And, you know, years before I would bake things and I would take them to the meeting. It's like, oh, you had a fight with Michael again, huh? Yeah. Make that bread. I had the most beautiful garden because I'd go out there and I'd dig his grave. It's like, yeah. And we laugh about that, you know. But there's a lot of things that just aren't funny, you know, in the active disease. And that book is just a lifesaver. So anyone who's new and you're kind of wondering, how, has a chapter on sex, of Dawn and Donna. It also has a chapter on communication, you know, the 5 points of communication. And I used it because my husband's well-educated and I just had some college. And, you know, I would write down these 5 points of communication on my hand because those wonderful alcoholics can divert the subject to where it's your fault again. I was like, okay. The one I hated was listen to their complaints. What? They have complaints about me? And that's a challenge, you know? And that's one even I get to use with my son. My son is just so adorable. I'll go back a little bit, too. When my son was really young, both my husband and I attended meetings on Saturday morning. And so I would miss the first part of my meeting because we'd have our son. I would go and drop him off at his meeting, and he would take him upstairs because it was just the fellowship at that time. And so my son, these were the buddies in the group. And everybody loved him and everything. So as we go through the years, when my son was, I don't know, what was he, like 6 or 8 or in that, we're driving in the car and he has 3 of his friends in the back seat. And they're all talking about what they want to do when they get older. And the one little girl says, oh, I'm going to marry a man from Australia. I'm going to go to college and then marry a man from Australia because I really like how they talk. And one of the little boys says, I'm going to be a baseball player. I'm going to go to college, blah, blah, blah. And I said, Dane, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to go to college and then I'm going to be an alcoholic. And the expression on these other kids' faces were like, what? But what I get to see is my kids noticed how loving and kind and fun all the guys in AA were. And just, it was like, why wouldn't you want to be that? You know? He had no concept. And, you know, as he went away to college when all the insanity was, so the active disease came full force in my life a few years ago. And it was just really difficult. And my son had never, you know, experienced any of that. He was always around us, living program, and, you know, and it became very challenging, you know, to do that. And then he went away to college. The other things that started happening was I have two siblings. One of them, who's, I love them dearly, but just mean and vile to me, and any communication was just horrifying, calling me all these names. And you know, he held on to anger from when we were in high school. And he had a drinking problem back then. And you know, I suggested going to AA to him. He did not want to do that. And then once someone at his work put AA literature in his briefcase. So I'm not the only one that's notifying, you know, noticing that. And he came home and he thought it was me and just wanted to beat the crap out of me, you know, blamed me for all the things in his life. And, you know, things happened in our relationship. My door is open, you know. People have come and gone in my life. My door is open. I want to heal relationships. But he did some things where he threatened my life. He pushed my dad. He broke, you know, property and stuff. And I had to think, if this was someone else, what would I do? You know, I had to remove the label of brother. And I had called the cops. And I said, you cannot do this. This is not okay to behave this way. And they came and they took a report and all that stuff. And so it was going to court. And he went to my parents and he said, she's ruining our lives. And my parents came to me, please don't do this. Look at what you're doing to your brother. This is horrifying. How could you do that to a family member? And I said, sorry. He can't do that to me anymore. You know, he has to take responsibility for his behavior. I love you. I love him. But, you know, that's just not okay. And that was a real hard thing for me to walk through, too. And then one of my other siblings kept getting DUIs and wound up in jail. It's like, we're a good little Mormon family, for heaven's sakes. What's going on here? Anyway. And, you know, and then my dad got dementia and Alzheimer's. And my sister and I, we were taking turns taking care of him and my mom. And it was just like all these things were just responsibility. I'm responsible. I can take care of everybody. I can do that. And then I wasn't able to attend my meetings regularly. I dragged my mom's ass to the meeting, to the meeting. And she just didn't understand it. She couldn't comprehend what was going on. Every time she'd hear the word alcoholic, she'd go, oh. These are alcoholics. But she'd always say, look at all my girlfriends that I have. All my friends would always come up to her and hug her and say, how are you doing, Claire? You doing good? Look at all my girlfriends that I have. And, you know, 2 years ago, my dad died. And my dad was my hero. Oh, gosh. You know, he was the one that always just made life wonderful. I could tell him what I wanted to do, and he would just make it happen. You don't find men like him anymore, you know. And my mom was always so mean to him. And she just, you know, was so hateful. And when he died, you know, my mom had dementia. And this is what I'm going through now. So I still take care of my mom. My sister and I, we share the responsibility with her. And this is where so much of my life has changed, you know, and why I'm so grateful for Zoom or online meetings, whatever. I don't know where I would be if this didn't happen, because I need that constant or regular good input. You know, I would call my sponsor and I'd say, I need to run away from home. I need to run away from home. And then Dolores calls me. He's like, oh, I get to run away from home. I was so excited. I get to come here and get nonstop love and meetings and just the kind of stuff I need, you know. What a wonderful place to find principled people that are on this same path that I want to be on. And, you know, and then my husband, so... sorry, that was loud. You know, my husband wound up being in a wheelchair. And, you know, when all this craziness was going on, I just said, I don't want to live this way. I can't live this way again. I can't go through this one more time. And I filed for divorce. I was planning on getting out of Dodge, man. Talk about alcoholics making a geographic. Here I was. I had my aunt in South Carolina. I had made new friends. I was out. I'm leaving here. Then my aunt died. My friends moved. You know, it's that one more time. I make the plans, and God laughs and laughs and laughs. And I had filed for divorce. And, you know, all these things kept coming up, where one more surgery, or he needed a doctor appointment, or he needed that, and he didn't have people that would take him, and blah, blah, blah. Course I can do that, you know. This is where I just kind of had to become willing to say, okay, what do you want from me, God? What direction do you want me to go? And then I would just do what was in front of me. I had no clue what the end result was. I kept thinking, we need a divorce. And then I'd say, you know, it's like back in the active disease before. It's like my head says, leave, 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 leave. And my heart says, oh, you love him. Don't leave. And it wasn't until those two things came together where I was able to make that decision. And that's what I was waiting for. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, this is exhausting, you know, taking care of my family and taking care of him and everything else that was going on in my life. And so he just had all these multiple surgeries. He had 3 back surgeries, 4 neck surgeries, carpal tunnel surgery, knees replaced. And it was just like, you know, why, what is it? I'm tired of being a caretaker, but I love this man, you know? And what is love, you know? And someone once said to me, you know, love is not a feeling, Mindy. Love is a decision. And I had to look at that, you know? Do I only love this man if he's sober and, you know, how he treats me is a big part of it, and the trust. You know, I always used to say that if you don't have mutual respect and trust, that's not a relationship. And so those are the things, you know, I can love him unconditionally, but my marriage has conditions. And there are certain things that I won't put myself through again. And I was able to just say those things to him, and then it's whatever you want to do, dude, you know. And he made some choices. And, you know, I'm married one day at a time, but for the rest of my life, you know. And so my husband is in a wheelchair, but he's slowly, really, really slowly making progress, but he's making progress. He walks with a walker. He has, you know, quality AA friends around him who understand family recovery. You know, I think that that's an important thing. You know, Susie and I were talking about this morning, because she used to say that, oh, stick with the winners. And I'd say, we're all winners. We're here. We're all winners. And over the years, as you know, other people have said, you know, we're all here because we're not all there. And I get to see, you know, and what my sponsor always says to me, Mindy, you can either be a good example or a loud warning. And I know I have been a loud warning in a lot of things, you know, but I'm able to, there are such quality people in the program, and this is like the optimal place to find them. You know, people who understand family recovery, and you know, it's not AA's and Al-Anon's, because that's what some of the people, you know, it was like, we're the enemy. We're not the enemy, you know. Who else cleans up your crap? You know. But I think that that's what's so important, and it's just an evolution of uncovering all these wonderful things. I'm going to close here, but I hope that I've shared something that somebody gets a little insight with. And but one of the things that I always like to close with, which is my interpretation of our tradition, you know, where it talks about principles above personalities, where I'm hoping maybe I said something that you might be able to apply in your life. But if you did, please leave my name out of it. It's something that you learned, you know, whether it's good or bad. And it's just, that's the thing that when I attend meetings today, I try to go to the meeting and say, ask, you know, my higher power to please keep my mind open and my heart awake and receptive, you know, because this is the language of love. And that's something that, you know, I got from my sponsor and my grand sponsor and all the people in my life. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your convention. And thank you for listening. Thank you.